Welcome to the School Yoga Coach Podcast. My name is Molly, and I am a middle school teacher, a trauma-informed yoga teacher, and I'm the founder of the Instructional Yoga Coach Training Program, because we believe that every school needs a yoga teacher. Hello, how are you? Here at School Yoga Coach, we spend a lot of time focusing on developing a sense of safety and self-care for both teachers and students and anybody really involved in the life of a child. It's gotten more difficult to do with recent events, and recent can be in the last month or two, but really it does go back several years. It seems like we have been living in a constant state of turmoil, chaos, confusion, a lot of things that make us as a whole, and of course individually, feel not very safe. And today I want to talk a little bit about that, because I don't believe in being overly optimistic, like toxic positivity, if you want to call it that, in terms of just don't, you know, just think this or just do a little yoga and everything will be better. That's not quite how it works. We know that. But at the same time, I refuse to give up and give in to these very challenging times, these challenging events, these challenging feelings. So I've been doing a lot of thinking about what that means, what I'm actually thinking about and talking about, and how I might be helpful to teachers and students and schools as they too, or you too, are processing the recent events of our nation, at least, if not our world. So today I want to talk about the idea of safety. And I know I've addressed it, of course, many times, because that's the foundation here, is everything that I talk about in terms of bringing yoga into the classroom is to make sure kids feel safe enough to be vulnerable to learn. That's really what it's about in terms of academics. But how do we do that when we have some very frightening and violent events going on in our world? So if you don't mind, let's talk through this a little bit. And these are my thoughts and my thought process based on my experience as a teacher and my experience as a yoga teacher, and then of course bringing those together in my focus as the school yoga coach. That doesn't mean it's the one and only, or I'm probably missing something. So I definitely want to hear from you and see how your thoughts either connect with this or what you have, you know, thinking differently. But let's talk about what it means to feel safe versus what it means to be safe. And because we're struggling with that right now, I think that what we next need to reach for is resilience. And resilience is a concept that I've heard about before, but I haven't really explored it to the depth that I want to today. As a school yoga coach, our objective is to help students adjust their nervous system so that it reflects a feeling of safety that then allows them to open up, explore, be curious, and learn. We know that if a kid is not feeling safe enough to be vulnerable, to be wrong, to explore things, they're not going to learn. Whether they're thinking about it or not, their nervous system kind of prevents that. So the feeling of safety is a result of the nervous system and then interpreted by the mind. And the reason that's a little bit difficult right now is because we're doing so many things to make sure they are safe, to keep them physically safe. But a lot of those safety measures are highlighting to the student and to the teachers and to the parents the existence of this danger. Okay? So being safe is not the same as feeling safe. We have many, many people who are physically safe who do not feel safe. One of the most important things that we talk about in our yoga instruction is that when we don't feel safe, whether we are or are not, so if we're actually in an unsafe event or we just don't feel safe, the two main things that we can do is take action and find connection. Those two things are what help bring down the stress response, the fear response. So that whole bit, that feeling safe, being safe, and what to do if you don't feel safe, that's the focus and the foundation of what we guide schools to do through our school yoga coach services. But now we are facing more severe, horrific, just heart-wrenching tragedies. We're struggling. I'm struggling to know how to guide schools to help kids feel safe when we have that. So I'm like, I think we need to start looking at resilience and what that actually means, at least from my perspective, what I would be offering as a school yoga coach. So feeling safe is just kind of working on the nervous system, okay? Being safe is working on the external things, right, that provide safety measures. And resilience is what comes after the danger, right? What comes after the trauma? What comes after the event that sent us perhaps into a tailspin, tragedy, loss, horrible things, right? Because resilience is important because the opposite of resilience is hopelessness, is just giving up, isn't it? The opposite of resilience is giving up. And while it might feel for a while that we want to give up, we know, I think we know, I know for kids, I don't want my students and your students to give up, right? I want a better future. And I want that future to start right now. But I have to think about what it actually means then if I want them to be resilient. As I started with, that doesn't mean that I want to pretend that everything's fine, there are no problems, and everybody is happy, happy. So let's look at what I would say are four key parts of encouraging resilience, and this could be in your own adult world, but it's also a way of guiding kids through this act of hopefulness. Okay. So the first part of resilience, because resilience does imply a trauma occurred, something that really knocked us down. Knocked you off your feet. Didn't just like create a little discomfort, but really knocked you down. And the first thing we need to do is accept that that event occurred. And I personally have been struggling with this one because some of the events that have occurred, I don't want to think about. I don't want to acknowledge, I don't want to believe that anyone was capable of doing these things. But I also know that by not facing it a little bit, I stay stuck in ignorance in a way, right? That blind ignorance. So I do have to accept that the event happened. It happened. It occurred. It occurred more than once or whatever, you know, or it occurred for a long time if I'm thinking about the pandemic. It happened. And when it happened, all these other things happened. So people were separated. People were sick. People were injured. People were, people died. All of this. It all happened. So then the reason we have to do that is because what fear wants to do is then take what happened and turn it into stuff that didn't happen just to keep us kind of scared, right? To keep us feeling afraid. And it's okay to feel the fear. It's okay to feel like this isn't safe, but we have to know exactly what we're looking at or exactly what we're dealing with. So this is an opportunity for us to, you know, use our higher thinking brain, our critical thinking brain, to listen to the messages that's going on, either like what's coming into our mind or what we're actually saying out loud or what we're hearing on the news, and simply say, is that true, right? And identify, like, what do I know? What do I personally know is true? Okay. What do I absolutely know is not true? And then the rest of it is kind of like, that could be true, or it could not be true. That could be the whole story. That could be part of the story. So we're going to try to bring into our active thinking a recognition of what we know is true. And then when we sit with what we know is true, we can look at it, we can cry with it, we can become angry about it. But that's where we're going to allow ourselves to start, is with what is we know is true. So that is step one, accepting the events that occurred and recognizing the reality. Okay, the second thing, once we've looked at what is true, what isn't, and accepted that it occurred, is working to avoid victimization. Now, that's a tricky one because in these events, there are victims. And we could say we're all victims of the event if it has upset our way of life, our belief in other people, in the way that we conduct ourselves, places we go. And that's all right. That's okay if that's how we're reacting right now. But we're going to, that's why I say we don't just avoid victimization. We're going to work to avoid it. So this is part of the resiliency, is we are going to notice when we feel trapped. So for example, many people are like, I am never going to a parade again. I am never going to a concert again. I am never going to the grocery store again. So kind of getting that sense of being, I am trapped at home now. I'm trapping myself at home in a way. Now, as I said, this doesn't mean you can't do that. I just want you to recognize that at that moment, you are accepting that you are a victim of this event. And like I said, we are victims of this event. But we're going to work our way out of that victimization. Another aspect of victimization is feeling hopeless. So remember when I said the opposite of resilience is hopelessness, that's what this is saying. What's the point? What's the point? It's never going to get any better. No one's ever going to listen to me. Why should I even bother? And then the third one of victimization might be just feeling helpless. There's nothing I can do. It's all in the control of those people. There's no way I can make myself safe. Or, and the opposite, because I feel helpless, I take drastic measures because I think that that's what I need, for example. For example, it could be lots of things. And then the third and fourth are sort of like how we do this, how we avoid victimization, how we work ourselves out of that. And we start by just imagining a better outcome. So we imagine, like, what would I like it to be like? What would I like to be doing? Like, what do I imagine would be the better outcome? What do I want to have happen? And I encourage you to write this out, paint it out, talk it out, sing it out, just like any way you can. Just begin with imagining. And I think a lot of people skip this part and they go to an action, but they haven't fully absorbed the imagination of what it could be, because there's a lot of beauty and hope and joy in the imagining. Now, once we can do that, then we can move to the fourth one, which is choosing to act towards that better outcome. So once I've fully imagined it, I've imagined my utopia, so to speak, then I can be like, okay, what's the thing that I can do to make that utopia a little bit more of my own or my family or my children's reality right now? So when I said, you know, sometimes people skip over the imagining, they go to, we want utopia now. And we go to our elected officials and we demand that there's a law that makes people love each other or whatever, you know, and you can't do that. You can't make a law to change people's hearts. Even if we'd love for that to happen. So what can we do? What can I do to change people's hearts? What can I ask my government to do to change laws? What can I ask my kid's teacher to do to change how the messaging, how my kid feels in school, or how I feel about sending my kid to school, or how can I ask, or what can I ask my principal to do to help me as a teacher provide better care in a classroom? So choosing to act is, we said, one of those things that helps us break out of not feeling safe to feeling safe. But action is only one. The other part is connection. And this is the other thing that we tend to fall down on is, you know, we do a lot of activism that creates division instead of connection. Like, I find all the people who are on the same side as me and we want to take action, but we're not trying for connection. We don't even have to make a physical or verbal connection. If you make that connection in your heart, you realize, you know, it's not good people versus bad people. It's people who are doing the best they can, sometimes making mistakes, and sometimes choosing horrible, awful things to do. Once we imagine a better outcome and we start working as a community to create a better outcome, not a more angry outcome, not a more divisive one, not a more punitive one, but one that really says we all belong here. We're all safe here. We're all looking out for each other. I think that's an important part of the resilience process, because that means that you've chosen to get up, go out, and do the things that make you enjoy life while also caring for other people. So once we can do that, I think we can feel like we are kind of on the road of resilience. And I don't think anybody should feel bad about not being there right now. I just want to encourage you to, you know, decide you want to be on that road. Start thinking about that road and believing in it. Or at least believing in it. Let's start by believing in it for our kids. And then maybe seeing how we play a role in that. And then believing in it for our whole community. You know, one thing I do, or I have done with these last few months, is kind of thought back on history. And it's not happy, like, right? When you go through history, it is not a happy story. It is mostly a painful story for humans. And I think that's really what some cultures have said. You know, I know that's what, like, Buddhism is based on, is like, hey, the reason we're suffering is because we basically believe we shouldn't be. And yet that is what life is. It doesn't mean it's not constant, but like life is full of loss and pain and stubbed toes and fevers and violence and famine and accidents and all of these things. Like, this isn't only something only a few humans have experienced. We all at some point experience pain. And the suffering comes from saying we should not be feeling that pain. Looking at, like, the reality, I think that's that part of being human is being flawed, finding weakness. And yet, this is the part that makes us human and not just animals, is being able to imagine a better outcome, being able to act on that better outcome. I hope this has been a little bit helpful for you. Like I said, it's sort of my thought process as I've been struggling to come back to the podcast for the last several weeks. And I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your thoughts. What has brought you moments of clarity, moments of hope, moments of resilience? And where are you still struggling? Where are you feeling stuck or sad or unsafe? Because one thing I can guarantee is you are not alone. You are not alone. None of us is alone in this. And if you'd like to be even less alone, you can get a taste of our Tranquil Teacher community for free by grabbing a self-care checklist. The link will be in the show notes. And that just walks you through 7 days of activities you can try to help you create a little more ease in yourself, in your nervous system, in your mind, in your body, in your heart. And don't forget to grab your copy of the Tranquil Teacher Lesson Plan book. That lesson plan book gives you all the space you need for your regular classroom lessons, but it's a book inside it that walks you through very simple and a variety of self-care habits that you might want to incorporate into your week, into your month, as well as some SEL outlooks. They're not really lessons for kids. They're mostly like SEL ways of helping you as a teacher create a safe and encouraging classroom with some activities for kids and some things for you to do. So the Tranquil Teacher Lesson Plan book is also linked in the show notes. It's a great book to get before you start back at school. All right, guys, I am here with you every step of the way, and I believe in you, and I truly do imagine a future of teachers and students coming together in the classroom, learning together in the classroom with ease and joy and at peace. Hey, thanks for joining me on the School Yoga Coach podcast. If you'd like to check out some of the resources that I am sharing with both teachers and yoga teachers, please visit www.schoolyogacoach.com. Stay well, everybody.